This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to visit with Mushir Robinson of the Louisiana NAACP. This is Super Bowl week in New Orleans, and much will be discussed regarding the beauty and glory that is the Crescent City and is the state, but we won't be talking much about murder and AIDS and things that are largely ignored by elective officials in our state. We'll talk to Mushir Robinson about this and more. Also on the program, Roger Wilson, actor and movie producer who has returned home to Louisiana. He's involved in the film industry, and he, of course, he's an advocate of film tax credits. Should they be changed in a fiscal situation such as we're having right now? And Stephen Beck from the LSU School of Music. All this, now the news on WRKF. Good morning. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. We may also be reached at inkstershow@wrkf.org. To begin our week, we have Mushir Robinson of the Louisiana NAACP, always a provocative guest and a man who does not hold back in his thoughts about where we are in this state regarding race and other issues. New Orleans' murder rate in 2012 remained right at the top of the list of American cities, 193 murders in New Orleans. That was six fewer than in 2011, but on a per capita level, it puts New Orleans in the dubious position of being ahead of places like Chicago and other hotspots for murder in this land of ours, and way ahead of places like New York City and Los Angeles. New Orleans is a murder capital. The former mayor, who recently got indicted, Ray Nagin, said it was part of the New Orleans brand. In Baton Rouge, not much better. We're in the top 10 when it comes to homicides. And in 2012, in Baton Rouge, there was an actual uptick in murders from the year before. So this is something that is largely ignored as we celebrate all that is good in Louisiana, and there is much that is good in our state, and certainly we like to put our best foot forward, but nonetheless, we tend to neglect issues like this. The governor of Louisiana made two major national addresses over the last few days, and not once did he discuss the murder rate, the AIDS rate, the poverty rate, all these issues that are afflicting the people of Louisiana. Good morning to you, Mushir Robinson.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well, and I did want to note that 83 people were slain in East Baton Rouge Parish last year, two more than 81 in 2011. Mushir Robinson, you moved to New Orleans a little while back, and you talked about issues that brought you to the Crescent City, and when it comes to this particular issue, both cities have much work to be done.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately, I think, it's a problem of all cities that have intractable poverty, and New Orleans and Baton Rouge are just two of those cities. And so the statistics within a plus or minus range of 5 to 10 points or whatever, it really doesn't make any difference. I mean, it's the rates everywhere in the country are awful. New York is sort of, you could say, a bright spot, if one could call it that, relative with its large concentration population relative to the, sort of the rest of the state. I do want the rest of the country. I do want to say, because of the nature of this interview, I don't want to officially speak for the NAACP on this. I want to kind of go a little bit off track because I want to be careful not to mix our organizational policy with some of my thinking, and particularly around murder. I'm an epidemiologist. I went to medical school at Oxford and was writing on murder and this sort of thing as a public health issue going back to the 70s. So I have a kind of a different kind of take on a lot of this, and so some of it would be considered conservative. Some of it would be considered radical. I'm sort of, because I use a public health paradigm to understand a lot of our social and economic kind of thing. So I agree with the NRA as an example that we have a public health problem in terms of mental health that needs to be addressed in America. That's fabulous because, as you know, since President Reagan's time, we have gone from having institutions where people could get proper care. Sometimes inappropriately, people were put in these places. But there were places where we could get people affordable care. Today, we've gone to a community mental health model where there's so many people without insurance, and there's so many people who have no idea that they have various problems, and they're not seen. So we have, you know, this tremendous black-on-black crime, and which transcends the kind of mass murder we've seen in these places around the country, which have been promulgated by, in the main, alienated young white men. But we have a problem of young black men whacking each other. And it's not a problem just in Louisiana. It's a problem everywhere. And intractable poverty over generations causes all kinds of maladjustment, which goes undiagnosed and untreated.
281 murders between Orleans and East Baton Rouge Parish last year. 281, getting close to one per day for the two largest metro areas in the state, both of which went decisively for President Obama in the 2012 election. Is there a correlation between politics and crime and the governor and others, but primarily the governor is the leader of the state? He doesn't talk about crime.
Well, you know, I don't want to justify the governor here, but let me put it this way. We're in a rock and a hard place. Here we are today, probably being one of the best positioned economies in the United States, which means in the world, because of energy prices and this massive opportunity with natural gas that is global. And our opportunity to export it and all of this other sort of thing. So we have an opportunity to create a sustainable, booming, all-class, all-race economy. And governor's out trying to recruit investment everywhere and every place. How you do that, how you feature your state while simultaneously dealing with the dirty linen, so to speak, is a very, very, very difficult question. I think that we could have more transparency on this issue without hurting the state. But we don't necessarily have, in Louisiana at this point, that kind of dialogue going on where from the grassroots we're creating public policy forums where there is that kind of engagement on those kinds of issues. And that's a problem. And we will have to find a way to have that kind of conversation with the governor, just as we need to continue that conversation on education, the school system, the privatization of schools, mm-hmm. which may in fact not be a bad thing in some cases. But in other cases, in terms of creating in quote, high-performing schools, we still have all of these young people who go to school unprepared in terms of their meals, their dress, their social environment, their social infrastructure, and the schools that are the charter schools don't have the resources nor the interest to deal with those children. So all of these issues are interrelated. The question of poverty, the question of the pipeline of the schools to the jails, the public health crisis, the mental health crisis, all of these things which are below the line of visibility are part of a kind of structural American apartheid.
All right, hold that thought. 297-5633 is your number. And mind you, crime is going down, not up, but down in most American cities, in Baton Rouge and in New Orleans. The numbers were pretty much the same in 2012 as they were in 2011, but we're talking about a rate that is way ahead of the American curve and ranks with the most murderous cities in the Western Hemisphere. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. The governor, as noted, has given two major national addresses in the last week and has not mentioned crime. He has mentioned, of course, economic issues, but crime and the economy often go together, and we have Mashir Robinson, who is head of the economic development arm of the NAACP in Louisiana. And this is something that the governor, as he states, the GOP should court every vote, should not discount anybody, any place, any time. I remember when Ronald Reagan ran for president in 1980, Mashir, he went to the most murderous part of New York City and gave an address. He wasn't received very well, but he went there. Governor Jindal, when is he going to go to some of these zip codes where the murder rates are at an apex?
I would hope that this will begin pretty much now. I think that one of the things, I'm going to give a kind of a shout out to him on this one. The fact that he's challenging the Republican Party to engage opens the door for how he also can engage. Now, everybody's got different styles, but he has this opportunity. I think he's calling for this sort of engagement, and we've got to find a way to invite him to engage on these topics. I'll give you an example of what's happening on one hand. They're trying to create a neighborhood stabilization mortgage type approach, this administration, which would provide funding with people with weak credit scores. Well, the only way we're going to be able to stabilize certain neighborhoods is to create quality middle-class, working-class housing and having an economic strategy to bring in stable people into certain environments is going to happen. Now, that's happening independent of a conversation about these sort of maladies. And to be perfectly frank, in the context of the black community itself, we still have a religious community that still has a certain kind of negativity towards AIDS in our community, and that epidemic, we have the highest AIDS rate in the United States. Terrible, terrible crisis that's ripping off and killing and exposing our people. Chlamydia, you can go through all of the different associated sexually transmitted diseases, which compound in very, very profound ways, and we're not addressing that within our own community, as well as a problem with government and its public health community not figuring out how to step up as we cut back on health care in the state with big budget deficits and other things. We're in a very, very tough time, and we need conversation. We need collaboration.
Well, some would say we also need action. And in Baton Rouge, there have been some significant efforts to curtail crime, and there are signs that some of these efforts are working. 49 murders occurred in the first half of 2012 in the parish and 34 in the second half. So maybe something is happening regarding the efforts that are ongoing here. But what can a governor do, for example, to address crime in a state?
Well, I think there are a number of things. First thing is you have to establish a dialogue with the leadership that is supposed to be representing the grassroots communities that are most caught in the contradiction. So we very, very much need to have a conversation that isn't a one-shot deal, but an ongoing work plan that involves the African-American leadership. In this state, it's African-American leadership. In other states, we have a much more diverse crew where we have to also deal with Hispanic leaders and Hispanic gangs and Asian gangs, Caribbean gangs.
297-5633, your number. Back with Mashir Robinson of the NAACP after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. Mashir Robinson of the Louisiana NAACP is with us. And if you'd like to reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We were talking as we went to the break in the first segment regarding the murder rates in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and, by extension, Louisiana. When the rates are high here, they put us as a state with quite likely the highest murder rate of any state in America in 2012. And, Mershear, you noted that most of the murders are blacks killing other blacks. And because of that, some people in the majority race say it's not my problem.
Fortunately, that's true. And part of the, it's interesting that we have a very, very, you know, I'm a Catholic. I'm a very strong Catholic. We have a very, very strong pro-life message. My brother always says, what happens to them when they're born? That pro-life message doesn't end with the birth of a child. It only begins. And our church, too, has a major responsibility. I'm a governor's Catholic in its social teaching and its ministry to not just, in quote, take care of the poor in terms of Catholic charities and you know, give a meal or do this, or St. Vincent de Paul, get some clothes out. It's much more fundamental as to try to flip the dynamic in the community to create a living, breathing, positive environment for children, young people to grow, to feel that they're embraced and loved. But as you know, in Baton Rouge, we live a very, very segregated existence. It's very, very possible if you're either Anglo or black to have a friend that isn't Anglo or black, or to have any kind of engagement, to have people to your home, to have your church, like my church was St. Aloysius, and maybe we had 2-3% African-American there. And even though the principal, who's absolutely a fabulous guy at St. Al's, trying to work to invite people to come to the school, to even have scholarships, we've not created, I think, the kind of environment where heroic efforts by one or two are not going to be enough. And so the governor has to be enjoined with his other parties, his other partners in this whole thing. So it isn't just about the governor. It is about all of us, our organizations, our social organizations, our churches, our businesses. We have in this state a few major companies. None of them have an African-American board member. I mean, how do you manage to figure that one out? Have no senior officers in these companies. So if we're going to create hope for young people and we're building a whole city in New Orleans, we have to be able to build a VA hospital or a Tulane hospital or schools, and the kids and the people there have to be able to see African-American people involved in that if they're going to have hope. And they're not. They're locked out. So this is something that is, again, not just the governor's issue. This is a whole frame that we have to begin to attack systematically. We're going to have a dialogue to do it.
Are things better in New Orleans than they are
in
Baton Rouge?
No, I mean, we have a much richer tradition, a gumbo tradition, in terms of sharing certain kinds of things on what I would call the cultural surface. But on the down low part of it, if you're not part of the music community, if you're not part of specific little niches of youth culture, we're segregated in New Orleans by zip code as we are in Baton Rouge. And so we have not addressed this issue.
You noted on this program that you moved from Baton Rouge in part because of the treatment you and your family received here. Have things got, are they better where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we're in a much healthier environment, but we're so privileged, my wife and I and our family. You know, my youngest son is over at Tulane in the architecture school. My daughter is at Ursuline, my youngest child, and it's a very diverse community. adherence align in terms of my daughter's experience and my son's experience. On the other hand, in terms of the parents who surround and are involved in that environment, they really stay to their old networks and groups. So in terms of really having developed the kinds of social kinships we would want, that still has not occurred, even though I know my wife is very aggressive at trying to create that kind of kinship opportunity. So we still have a very long way to go. I would say that New Orleans is less hostile to the idea of some kind of collaborative environment, yet it still hasn't demonstrated it, you know, other than, you know, the mayor has an integrated leadership team. But once you go beyond that team, when you go into the economy, you go into the corporations, you go into the contracting, mm-hmm. it's still where it counts at the economic level, which then spurs social relationships. It's not happening. You cannot have just feel-good social relationships. The social and economic are twins.
297-5633 for Mushir Robinson of the Louisiana NAACP. Fran asked about the governor's proposal to increase increase sales taxes and do away with the state income tax. Is that a good idea?
Well, I mean, typically where you have a value added or sales tax, it's regressive. And so we have to really look at what the specific proposal is, because with the earned income tax credit, with the way our tax structure currently is, people who earn under $40,000 a year, which is the average which is 90% of the African-American community in Louisiana, they're paying a very, very small tax rate, because in the main, they don't own property, in quote, they have low income. So to impose additional sales taxes on that community, which already is marginalized, I think that's a difficult thing, and I think we need to have some much more conversation about that approach to taxation.
So your early read is one that gives you pause?
Yeah, it does give me pause, because we also know that from the imposition of taxes, I mean, New Jersey is a good example, one of our highest income states, had no income tax. But at the end of the day, trying to migrate towards an advanced economy, had to impose an income tax. Not having an income tax probably works when you have very high income and your population may be small. But where you have the kind of population we have and concentration of poverty, I think it's kind of difficult. And I think the economics of this have been analyzed worldwide, because, you know, we don't just live in a vacuum of the U.S. or in Louisiana, but there's economic data worldwide collected about when it works, what levels you can have of value-added or sales tax, and what levels you need to sustain an economy relative to other forms of taxation. So you have to have an overall and comprehensive approach, and doing away with the income tax might be difficult. Now, the other thing, though, the governor did say, was that some of the other tax breaks that have been promised would be no longer for business, would no longer be available. That may be true, but we have 20-year commitments to people, and we certainly can't abrogate the commitments we've made to attract investors to our state. So this is very complex.
Doris downtown. Doris, you're on the air with Mushir Robinson.
Yes, good morning. The reason why I called, because I am listening at the conversation of this NAACP leader, and he's supposed to be a leader for the black people. But really, he sounds too white to be in that position. He seems like he's a little bit off base about what's really going on with crime and our leaders that are in office. I don't really see anything happening with crime. And I don't know if it's because it's not about a black person being in office in leadership. We have a governor that's hardly ever here to do anything in our state. We have another leader who's taken an oath as an attorney general who lynched black people in the court system.
All right. I don't think that's the case with the attorney general. In fact, I know it's not. But I think she makes some valid points, Doris does, about the governor being an absentee governor. And certainly she made some strident remarks about you, Mushir. Would you like to respond?
Well, I just say the following. You know, the work we do, we're all volunteers in our what we do. And just I've been sort of involved in organizing from days against the Klan in the 60s till today, because I'm 60-some years old now. And so I've spent my life engaged in trying to do empowerment work. Can I take criticism about the effectiveness of that work? I'm sure I can. But in terms of the governor, I'm sure we can say the same thing. But at the end of the day, it is about people like this sister who just called in, putting her shoulder to the wheel and volunteering and participating in the work we're doing. We're doing tons of work at the NAACP in terms of community outreach and empowerment across literally every parish in the state. Are we as effective as we can be? No. Is our effort, though, is determined by volunteer leaders like this woman, and we would welcome her participation.
Bruce in Walden. Hi, Bruce. You're on with Mushir Robinson. Good morning.
Yeah, hello. Just wanted to ask Mushir about the NAACP's response to another assault on the poor and people of color, which is Jindal's refusal to extend Medicaid eligibility to 400,000 citizens, about half of whom are African-American, converting a good segment of our population into an insured population eligible for all kinds of health care supports.
The whole issue of our health care infrastructure is absolutely, at best, a shambles. And that is another example of what needs to be brought back down to some form of community dialogue. Clearly, we should be accepting federal funds. We should be having our exchanges set up. But at the end of the day, the real problem is that the health care bill that we passed doesn't have a national health care backbone, a single-payer system.
So you think the governor should accept the Medicaid money?
Yes, I do.
Okay. 297-5633-877-217-5757. Those are your numbers. And Mushir Robinson, who is speaking as a citizen, not as a authority at the NAACP. He is, of course, involved intricately with the organization in Louisiana, but he wanted to make it known that the remarks that he is expressing on this program are those that he and only he has. 297-5633. Kevin, I don't think I've got the lines that are needed for me to go to. So, Mushir Robinson, what about AIDS in Louisiana? What do you think about the Baton Rouge and New Orleans being among the top three cities in America, two of the top three cities in America in AIDS?
Well, the whole idea of when people don't have a life-affirming perspective of their future, they lack discipline, and they end up in behaviors that make absolutely no sense for a thinking person. But it's like live wild, die young. We have too much of that kind of thing going on. And we're going to have the Catholic Church and the other churches engage in a much more dynamic way than just simply preaching abstinence. The public health paradigm that's been established that the Gates Foundation is funding in Africa has had a huge impact. And if we were to adopt some of those methodologies in the United States, particularly in Louisiana, we could be attacking these this sort of epidemiological disaster. that we have around AIDS.
Dan in River Bend. Hi, Dan. You're on with Mashir.
Hi. You mentioned about trying to address the issue of crime by sort of economic development, I guess, for lack of a better term, in some of the poorer neighborhoods. But isn't it kind of a chicken and the egg kind of problem? I mean, how do you convince someone to, put money into a neighborhood that's crime-ridden before you take care of the crime issue? And as a secondary to that, I mean, I guess you could go into some of these very poor neighborhoods, level these 60- and 70-year-old double shotguns, put up new houses. They would then be probably far too expensive for the people who are currently living there to stay there. So, I mean, how do you address that without looking at just the core issue of people refusing to accept their neighbor's behavior as being socially acceptable?
Mashir?
One of the interesting things is our oil companies invest globally in the most desperate places. And when they come in and invest, they invest also in social infrastructure because they're exploiting the natural resources. So we have an American paradigm of integrating health, education, and economic development to flip communities that we use around the world. It's supported in addition by USAID, which takes a front and leadership position in making sure we can reestablish communities. We're doing this in Iraq. We're doing this in Afghanistan. We have huge experience in this.
Aaron on College Drive. Aaron, good morning. You're on with Mashir. Please be brief.
Yes, hi. Mr. Robinson, I had a question. Is there contact information that you can give out for people who'd want to help with the NAACP or volunteer? Where could I get it?
Sure. I'm going to give you my public email address, and I'll be happy to respond to getting you connected, which would be our pleasure. It's Mashir, M-U-S-H-E-E-R-C, @gmail.com. So if you send something to me there, I will make sure I'll call you back, I'll talk to you, and I'll make sure that you're referred to who would be helpful in getting you involved.
That's
our pleasure.
Mashir C?
Mm-hmm, like cat. Mashir C, M-U-S-H-E-E-R-C, @gmail.com.
Okay. We'll spend a bit more time with Mashir. Here's a note from Leonard Joseph. He says, my heart goes out to you and your guest. Tough topic. Ronald Reagan visited Charlotte Street in the South Bronx and used the nation's worst neighborhood as a backdrop. Other presidents did also, but then did nothing but little by little defund and eviscerate the anti-poverty programs that were working. Eventually, Reagan could announce that poverty won. I was a Vista volunteer in 1968, South Bronx, writes Leonard. We know how to make the changes you're talking about, and we know how to make sure they fail. We'll talk more with Mashir Robinson after this brief timeout. Also, Roger Wilson on tax credits for film in Louisiana, and Stephen Beck from the LSU School of Music. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF, and we'll spend a few more minutes with Mashir Robinson and then go to Roger Wilson, Diola in Southern Heights. Diola, you're on the air with...
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question to the guest, to Mr. Robinson, is trying to find out what the NAACP is doing in terms of taking stock in all the programs, policies, and other decisions of that type by the state government that seem to be geared either intentionally or otherwise toward basically not only maintaining the disastrous situation we have in terms of poverty, crime, and all the other, but also in ensuring almost that it will continue in the future. Case in point, the dismantling of K-12 education with charter schools that aren't held responsible. When one fails for 3 years, another one fails for 3 years, and the students are therefore not getting the education they need to get, the refusal of by the governor to have this internet connection in the rural area, some $80 million let go.
All right. Would you respond, Mashir?
Yeah, just so he knows, when Pastorak was state superintendent, we had a very robust engagement and planning process with him. We have not met with and have tried to meet with the new state superintendent. We've not been able to get on his agenda to have conversation. We are working in each of the local parishes on this kind of an issue from the grassroots. We're working with the Black Caucus and anybody else that will work on this subject. You have to remember, Louisiana is a very conservative Republican state now. We have flipped everyone into the Republican Party except for Mary Landrieu, basically. And in that kind of a environment, we have to work with the people we got that are there. So having a position that may be 100% full square for public education is our position, but we also have to deal with the reality and try as best as we can to move the agenda. We're working with the teachers' unions. We're working with anybody that will work to lift the literacy and performance and success rates of these children so they're not pushed from school to jail, which is what's happening now.
Well, thank you, Mashir. Always a pleasure, and let's do it again soon.
Please, Jim.
Take care.
God bless you.
Bye. God bless you. 297-5633. Roger Wilson is with us, American actor and producer and native of New Orleans, and he went away and came back, and he's been back a few years now. And I think, Roger Wilson, good morning to you. You're joining us in Lafayette today.
Yes, sir, I am, Jim. Good morning to you.
Well, tell us what you're doing there in the hub city of Louisiana.
Well, I'm thrilled to be in Lafayette, and what I'm doing, Jim, is I'm helping raise awareness for an incredible new venture called the Online Incentives Exchange, the OIX. And the OIX is going to be the first national online, fully transparent marketplace for buyers and sellers of state tax credits, bringing a revolutionary transparency, price discovery, integrity, accountability mechanism to these wonderful economic development tools that the state offers a multitude of entities.
All right, so you're saying this would involve not only film tax credits, but other incentives as well?
Yes, sir. In this first phase of the OIX, we are dealing in final certified transferable credits, which include the film tax credits, the digital software credits, the state historic credits, for the most part. That makes up the bulk of the transferable offering.
Now, some of the tax credits that are involved, particularly in the film industry, are offsets on income tax. Now, if the governor gets his way, what happens to these credits against income tax?
Well, first of all, you know, the governor has announced his ideas for what, you know, falls under his tax reform agenda. No one really knows the specifics. First of all, will it be successful or what kind of phase in? I know there was a history of trying to eliminate the income tax before, and there was a 10-year phase out of it. So, but let's just assume for the sake of conversation, if it were to be an immediate phase out of the income tax, nobody really knows the details of the governor's program, and I think like a lot of people, you know, we're all waiting to hear. But it would be perhaps likely that the sales tax would then become an offset in place of the income tax. It is likely that a lot of these offsets that would be eliminated would take the form of a rebate, and those could in turn be traded on a transparent exchange. So from the OIX perspective, we're obviously very supportive of whatever the legislative body decides to enact. I trust they'll do the best thing for the people of Louisiana. They always have. And we know that this model of ours, it can adapt to whatever changes come about.
Roger Wilson is our guest, actor and producer, and he was at the Vanguard when these tax credits were being discussed, and they are extensive and some would say expensive, a 30% credit on qualified direct production for Louisiana expenditures. That's what the film industry receives. Has this been productive? Has this been something that's been good for our state, Roger?
Well, you know, Tim, it's like a lot of arguments. It depends on who you talk to, but I like to take my pulse from the small business owner in the state, the person who's getting a paycheck, who's working hard every day to put bread on the table and grow a company. And if you just look at that math, the year we issued, the year the state began this credit program, we made about $20 million in movies a year. This year, we'll cross the $1 billion platform. That $1 billion, if you talk to people everywhere from carpenters to drapery makers to set designers to porta-potty makers to caterers to restaurants to hotels to the amazing companies like Hollywood Trucks that now employ hundreds of people and is Fortune 500 rated one of the fastest-growing companies in the country. All these jobs. And that's what, you know, every bit of discussion is about on a federal and state level is jobs. All these jobs are a direct result of the movie program incentives. The bill that I was very proud to be a part of in 2007, what we then called Broadway South, which has now been passed into law, is the live musical performance tax credit. Because of that tax credit, the Sanger, a $55 million renovation, will be complete next year. The Joy is open, the theater in New Orleans. The theater in Shreveport has undergone a renovation and about to sign a unprecedented deal with Cirque Soleil. The jobs that came out of that, the jobs that will come when these permanent infrastructures are up and running. We have permanent infrastructures now in the movie business, Celtic Studios outside Baton Rouge, a major Hollywood-sized film studio. The plant, I mean, the sound stages, all these jobs and infrastructure would not have come about without these various incentives. I believe in this competitive market, as we lose jobs to globalization, as money becomes so hard to come by credit-wise, incentives are really one of the great, great things we have. And I think it's important for people to know these are not subsidies, these are not grants, these are not handouts. You only earn these final cert credits when you have done the work and spent the money you're obligated to spend in order to earn them.
So these online incentives, the exchange, how will it work?
Basically, what we're going to allow is it's a membership-only model. We're allowing just corporations that either earn the credits or corporations that seek to buy the credits in the form of offsetting various of their tax liabilities, be it a corporate tax or an income tax that an accounting firm may be looking at to for some of their clients, whatever it may be. It's a membership-only model where buyer and seller will meet on the exchange, seller posts his credit in a fully transparent form. They decide we are not a broker. We don't tell them what to list a credit for. We don't push the buyer to buy it at a certain price. We really do the, for lack of a better term, Jim, the eBay model. We're a clearinghouse where buyer and seller meet, and they determine the price, and they, in a very safe, secure, revolutionary way that we verify and certify these credits for buyer and seller's protection, they bid, just like people bid on E-Trade for a stock or people buy a book on Amazon. We are bringing technology and transparency to the state tax credit market.
Is this accessible now?
It is. It's online. You can go online. It's the OIX.com. You can learn a lot about the exchange. The real bells and whistles of the exchange are closed to our members only, but you can learn how it could, if you're a small company, a medium company, a big company, how you might realize, you not even know that you have a credit. You're entitled to a credit. People earn credits and they think they can't use them because they're still running a loss. What they don't know is these credits can be immediately monetized for liquidity, for cash. It's an invaluable tool for the smallest business to the largest business. And
okay.
You can go on, you can look up our management, you can look up our membership, which includes some of the leading banks, accounting firms, and corporations, not just in Louisiana, but the country, and you can apply to join.
All right. Well, Roger, we look forward to longer visit soon. This is something that you're well versed on about all aspects of the film industry. We did have a listener who wanted to know if you're the Roger Wilson from Porky's.
Yes, that is me. In an earlier incantation, I was in Hollywood working as an actor, and I can tell you I saw firsthand I went and made movies in places that we never would have gone had it not been for tax credits. And I saw a lot of people locally hired working around that movie that never would have gotten those jobs. So I've learned very early on the power of these incentives. I'm a big believer in them.
Okay. Well, Roger, thank you so much. Good luck to you, and let's talk again.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Happy New Year. And with us in studio now is Stephen Beck, Dr. Stephen Beck, from the LSU School of Music. He was named last year as the Heyman Professor of Composition and Computer Music. Good morning to you, Dr. Beck.
Good morning.
And you come this way from other places, including the University of California at Los Angeles. That's where you got your PhD,
right? That's where I got my degrees, Go Bruins.
Go Bruins. So, and held a Fulbright scholarship as well. So this man is a man of significance. And why did you come to LSU?
Well, I came to LSU initially just to because they offered me a job to teach composition. But since I've been here, I've had a lot of different roles, and including dealing with digital media and some of the tax credits that we were just talking about. But now I have a new job as the director of the School of Music, and I'm really here to talk about scholarships for the school and the program we have going on Friday night.
And you are the man in charge of the whole shebang now.
I am.
How many people are in the School of Music, Doctor?
We have over 50 faculty, about 400 students, split almost evenly between graduate and undergraduates. And it's we really have a world-class faculty. And so it is one of the best schools in the country.
And as far as the funding situation at LSU, it's affected every facet of life on campus, and I would imagine that includes the School of Music.
Well, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we often like to talk about how music is a lot like athletics at the university in the same way that an elite athletic program needs scholarships to recruit the very best student athletes. Schools of music at the elite level, like ours, need scholarship money to mm-hmm. recruit the very best music students to come into our programs and to learn and to be in our orchestras, in our opera, and our wind ensembles and our choirs.
As the director, will you continue to teach?
I do teach one course a semester. I try to keep that load as light as possible because I'm still learning the job. I'm still trying to figure out how much time I can spend on teaching, but I am still teaching.
All right. Now, there is a significant event this week involving the School of Music, and for those who would like to attend, I think today's a deadline for acquiring tickets online anyway. But it's the Concert Spectacular.
Yes, it's the Concert Spectacular. It's our annual gala event. It's an hour-long, nonstop concert, no intermission, no pause between numbers. It really involves almost every ensemble and faculty member and student at the school. We go from the symphony orchestra to the wind ensemble to the opera to individual faculty members. Even our laptop orchestra gets in there for a little bit. The jazz ensemble's there, our musical theater classes in there. And each group plays maybe 5-6 minutes, and we just go bang, bang, bang from one to the other. It's really an exciting time. And by the end, everyone, including the audience, is just kind of exhilarated and exhausted all at the same time.
That's this Friday.
That's this Friday at 7:30.
And today is...
Well, tickets are, I should correct you, tickets are available through the concert night. I mean, we can get tickets all the way up until Friday evening, and they're available through the Union box office. I think for tonight there are reservations for, we have a pre-concert gala.
There you go.
That has limited seating for people, and tonight is the night to make that reservation. And if you just contact the School of Music, we'll get you in touch with the reservations.
So the gala deadline is today.
Yes.
The Concert Spectacular deadline is right up to showtime.
Right up until showtime.
578-5128 is the number for the Union Theater box office, 225-578-5128. You may go to music.lsu.edu mm-hmm. as well. And Dr. Stephen Beck, who now is the director of the School of Music, when Mike Martin was chancellor not so long ago, and I think he was chancellor when you were hired, he said School of Music is a flagship unit within a flagship institution.
I couldn't agree more. And just to emphasize that, one of the big selling points for Friday's concert is we'll be debuting the performance of the Rodrigue Steinway piano, which is a Steinway piano that was painted by George Rodrigue. It's absolutely phenomenal. It has blue dogs all over the place, and it's just spectacular.
There will be an auction.
And there will be an auction later on, and the proceeds will be split between the School of Music and the Rodrigue Foundation.
And Willis Deloney will be playing.
He will be playing the Tiger Rag on it. So it'll be a great, it'll be, it, that in itself is worth the price of admission.
225-578-5128 is the number for the Concert Spectacular this Friday. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, everybody. Until tomorrow, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.